Hello and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week, the four formerly of the frontispiece operate from the Scrungle Pit while they try to figure out what to do with some incendiary information. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hello, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing, well, who you might know as Hecate. Actually, though, I'm Vic Galliani. I'm new here in the ward. Good to meet you. I certainly was not freshly hatched in the Scrungle Pit.
I am Robin.
Are you sure?
I am not sure anymore. I've heard Grungle Pit, too many times to introduce myself. I'll be playing the artist formerly known as Cal Armitage.
Hi, I'm Dez, and I'm unsure whether I'm still going to be Matchstick, but I'm also Luis Scaglione, or Luis G, if you will.
Hi, I am Nick. I will be playing Ing, an android drone operator who has recently distributed his consciousness into mechanical squirrels and pigeons. Nothing but good things can come from this.
I wish I can do that right now.
Sounds nice.
We are all of us Scrungle.
Okay, beat-eyed Scrungler.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, listeners. Prepare to be scrungled, and thank you to our players for those introductions. We, this time, can get right into it with our recap of last time, courtesy of Luis.
We, about to be scrungled, salute you. I initiated burn protocols at the front of space. The burning kind, not the fire kind, not the hacker kind. We did not immediately report the fire because that would defeat the purpose. Cato was not pleased. They may not have burnt enough bridges for it to feel cathartic. We emerged from the basements after Cato secured temporary lodgings through HF as intermediary, a warehouse squat that somehow has not been detected by the adjacent warehouse's owners, occupied by a guy who willingly calls himself the Scrungler. Haru left pretty quickly. Unrelated to the Scrungler, I'm sure. Medical checks took place. Tama was in shape that needed babysitting, Rikarth's baggage, still anonymous, still unconscious, still drugged, possibly comatose. Cal had some conversations with folks, including the world's most oblique offer of adoption, which led to a discussion of family, with Cato and then Ing. Apatia also showed up for a bit, but left before she'd have to encounter the Scrungler, although not before asserting that the Dreamers are controlling the station's weather. Bronwy stopped by, too, to get Cato set up with a new look, during which I consulted with her about new names and identities. Piper, the secretary Cal should have used more aggressively as a human shield, is apparently Barlow's niece and trying to craft a narrative against us, and I worked with KNB and Allie to ensure that there was a noisy information environment for her to work against. In other news, is it Warwick?
I have been saying Warwick, but I imagine that Warwick is probably closer to how it sounds okay when he says it.
In other news, Warwick Johnson has gone quiet after it was revealed that he was both instrumental in getting Goliath its station contract, as well as that he is heavily invested in the company without having declared that obvious conflict of interest. Vic, Ash, Tyr, and Luis Galliani, one of these names is not like the others, but sometimes that's how family works, all exist now. And we may have to see about the demise of one or more of our former identities. But in the meantime, having set everyone up with new names and faces, well, no, I didn't do the faces, but with new identities, I also cracked the encryption on the Goliath archive, which contained lab footage of leapers as if in development. It looks, as I said, like we can burn them down.
Marvelous. Thank you very much for that recap. I have to apologize to our players and listeners alike for getting so caught up in many of the admittedly very arresting goings on last time that I forgot to deal properly with the unidentified and possibly comatose prisoner. We got them on air to what I have dubbed the Scrungle Pit, but
Jesus.
Well, and to be fair, I don't think I came up with it, but I don't think that the invention of it was on air, so I suppose I have to take the blame for the shorthand becoming semi-official. In any case,
the worst part is that the Scrungler would like it. So, you know, there's that.
Mm-hmm. So this third prisoner got safely to your hidey hole, but then was promptly forgotten by yours truly in favor of more exciting things. So we are going to do a little bit of backfilling here for that, and that'll give our players an opportunity to backfill anything that they want to make sure has happened by the time. I guess I'm going to have to really get used to using the new names or else hand wave it. by the time Luis has sort of talked about their findings in this Goliath data that features leapers in development, among probably some other stuff once it has been dug through. That's going to be that moment where that information is shared here is going to be sort of like our, our present, where, you know, we sort of start talking about, you know, time and specifics again. So if we want to backfill anything before that point, then, you know, the first part of this session is definitely the time to do it. I'll go ahead, though, and start on that process by saying that around the time that Tama was heading out to First Aid Kittens anyway, Rickarth had already gone almost immediately after you all were settled to go check back in with the rest of Slagpie. And so since she's heading that way anyway, we'll have enlisted some assistance, temporarily to get herself and this prisoner to First Aid Kitten, with the intent that, you know, First Aid Kitten can have found this person in distress, you know, not knowing where they come from or who they are, and get them proper medical care after a quick initial, you know, intervention with anything that may be more like emergency care. So they are, and have been, by the time we arrive in that previously mentioned, like, present, out of your hands, because you are not equipped to handle, black market drug-induced coma conditions in any effective way.
It sure is the case that none of us are medics, yes.
So you can certainly follow up, and that can have been done before, you know, our moment of discovery that we're sort of backfilling up towards, if you would like. But that's sort of what became of that third prisoner for, you know, the duration of other events taking place in and around the Scrungle Pit. Anything else we want to make sure we sort of backfill before we get back to Luis's discovery here?
I would have stepped out of the Scrungle Pit for a bit to seed through use of Laughing Kid and Stealth an earthbound departure for Kato, as I believe was the plan.
All right. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to try and get a stealth roll from you then. Going to be clever plus stealth in this case, so 2d6 plus 6.
A 5, and then a 2. 7 plus clever plus stealth.
13, I believe, total. Having rolled to remain undetected, how much of what you are doing to, sort of spoof this departure is going to involve, hackery?
Some amount of, purchasing, seeming to purchase a ticket for Kato.
Mm-hmm.
That ticket being used on a flight.
All right. So I would also.
Non-trivial amounts.
Yeah. I would also like to get hacking and ghosting rolls from you then.
Yep. 6, 3, so 9 plus. I think that's an 18 now total.
I do have a slightly outdated character sheet, so I'll have to trust you on that.
3 clever, 3 ghosting, and plus 6 from both flavors of hacking skills and ghosting.
Makes sense.
3 and 6, so 18 and 18.
All right. So yeah, this is a series of little jaunts that you would count as pretty successful. And if anybody looks into it, they will see that to all appearances, Kato has departed for Earth.
I pass along the good news.
I accept the good news gladly. And I guess briefly before we move on to Nick, for my part, we can't really pretend Kato was dead. There's been a vigil at the frontispiece. Somebody's poked around and found a distinct lack of corpses. So if I get concerned messages, I respond with things like, yeah, thanks, I'm still standing, even if the shop isn't, har har. And where they diverge is in the particulars of what the expectation should be. I let anybody who I think ought to know or who I know might talk to each other that I'm headed headed to Earth. But I give a few different people a few different versions of where I might be going next. Mm-hmm. That way, if one of them comes back to us, we know where the leaky pipe might be.
Good deal.
And if you want me to roll for, the lying or covering up, that's cool. And if it doesn't require that, also cool.
Not at this stage, I don't think. Nick, thank you for your patience.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, mine's very brief. I think that it was even mentioned in the recap, but not on air last time, that my new name legally might be Tyr for the sake of consistency. We'll see if we actually use that name or not. Don't want to confuse listeners too much. So just that. New name's Tyr, technically.
Very good. I think I'm going to default to using the new names unless people tell me otherwise, just to try to stay consistent.
Sure.
It's going to be an adjustment pyramid. Mm-hmm.
Adjustment pyramid?
Scheme in particular.
The malapropisms are strong this evening, Robin.
They really are.
All right. So, rewinding to last episode, I had mentioned to Cal that I was going to do some Cal arm artage for them, but never said what that was. So I'm going to circle back around to that and say that I did decide upon doing it up graffiti style with kind of oblique references to each of us and personal events so that it's not a walking identity breach. So
thank
I will
you.
Have depictions of a crab, a bear, a hawk, a matchstick, some abstract patterns of, you know, kind of ramen and sake worked in there, some like kind of homey Japanese style, you know, anime food looking stuff. I'll also have kind of a scene somewhere in there of a peace sign made out of guns under a sprinkler, denoting Cal and Ing's first meeting, as well as more of a somber scene further away from those, perhaps, but no less important whatsoever, of kind of a Madonna with sun, denoting, you know, kind of depicting Michelangelo's La Pietà, so, you know, after Jesus has grown into a man and has been crucified and come down from the cross. So want to work Maddie in there as well.
I mean, this is a project that you can spend about as much time as your subject will let you, you know, on. You work pretty fast in these matters, particularly by human standards, especially, you know, with the ability to use your woodland creature flock, you know, drones to help with some of the detailing. But it's also, you know, fairly complex, fairly detailed, fairly personal. You can pour as much time into it beyond the bare minimum, like I said, as Ash will have time for, patience for. Probably goes in stages, but this would be, I guess, one of the rare instances where I can just have you roll graffiti on it. It won't turn out,
right,
you know, bad either way. I'm not going to do that to
snake eyes.
But, you know, let's have you do that. My inclination would be to have it go with cool, but I could see arguments for quick or clever as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool works for me.
All right, so let's get 2d6 plus 3, if you would.
I've got graffiti down for, I'm sorry. That makes sense. Graffiti's one, the clever's, cool's two. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's, two threes, for three six nine. Plus
critical
three
graffiti.
Is nine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, I think, the first time that's been rolled.
Well, no, there was another time.
Been
was
rolled
two times.
Okay. Yeah. I think it is only the second time though. You know, your end result is fairly eclectic, as I think, you know, is tends to be your approach to artwork. And was certainly, you know, this is like enough of a collage with enough of different kinds of symbols and subjects in it to, you know, really work in a variety of even sometimes contrasting styles. But the overall effect, you know, ends up kind of similar to the street art style of like Winifred Hawkins, this sort of like in places anime inspired pop art with deliberately like kind of clashing elements to stand out or to sort of emphasize. It is essentially a cybernetic augment sleeve tattoo, and you feel pretty pleased with the end result. I guess, Robin, I leave it to you how Ash feels about it.
I ask a lot of questions throughout the entire process, since I think some of the symbolism is lost on me. So I do have you walk me through what everything means, aside from the obvious, like matchstick is obviously Burn or Luis, and I recognize the crab after a beat, but I definitely seem perplexed by the peace sign made of guns, among other details.
Yes, I patiently walk Cal through. So this, I'm like, I'm a weapon of sorts, but the shape that I make with my life is different, and it's just about as disjointed as I just portrayed. It's a little hard to concentrate with my distributed consciousness.
Yeah, that description enough kind of causes an aha moment of, oh yeah, like remember the sprinkler system and the busted pipe in that closet.
Yeah, our first meeting and one of my first moments of real compassion.
I breeze past that, immediately pointing to the hawk and then the ramen with the equal questioning in my expression.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, overall, I'm just trying to remind you that you're not just a fighter. You're that too, but there's more to life. It's more to life than taking other people out of it. And now it's on your arm, so good luck getting away from that.
You think I live for ramen?
I mean, ramen brings people together.
Oh, true. That is what we ordered at that time we gathered in the old apartment.
Yeah, first family meal before we'd really called it that. Family, not meal. We probably called it a meal.
Yeah, we called it a meal. Thanks. I think this is a nice way of covering up what's now a very illegal augment.
Do you think that it'd be too on the nose to add some chrome fangs to this?
I mean, if you want to.
All right, well, you think on it.
It wouldn't be the first time chrome fangs have met this arm.
Exactly.
Wouldn't be the second either.
No. It does keep happening.
What else would we want to have occurred before the decryption reveals the information gotten from Goliath's systems, if anything? If we're done backfilling, that's totally fine. Just checking to make sure nobody gets left out in the cold.
I would be checking in with Canby and Haru and Ali to see the state of things and the information, mm-hmm. like landscape.
So, last time we had seen K&B go fully dark, and the time before that we had seen Ali go fully dark. But
okay, I didn't know if in the 2+ weeks.
Well, that is what I was asking.
Okay.
Is it your intention to, like, sort of attempt to reach out to them?
I will let them surface and make that decision for themselves, but if they do, I would certainly be checking in on them on things.
Okay. It's easy enough to get information, well, information from in contact with Haru. She talks a little bit about her dad. He's, you know, feeling kind of physically stronger, more stable, though he's got a little ways to go, but he gets confused easily still. She's, you know, obviously glad to, have him back, and he seems to be, mostly lucid. He just, gets drawn into memories or sense impressions that he then kind of is a little it's not that he fully loses track of when or where he is, but that he's kind of panicky about having zoned out.
Yep.
So she's kind of just trying to
do her best to help him with that. Once she catches you up on how things are going with Canopus, the very next thing she does is send you two cash.
Cool.
You know, in terms of, she somewhat jokingly calls it back pay. But yeah, you can add that around now. It'll be a little while after that, closer to the decryption finishing, when we get a word from Ali and K&B. Between those two things, probably the whole gang will get a word from Tama, who has been cleared for normal low risk activities, no riot medicine until further notice. But she'll update you on the third prisoner. The medical state of this third prisoner seems to have been confirmed as essentially a medically induced coma. And so First Aid Kitten has contrived to get them admitted to like an actual hospital. And they're doing essentially some like rundowns before they attempt to counteract, substances and try to bring them out, and this is the other part, in so doing, Tama assisted First Aid Kitten in providing just enough information for the authorities to identify this patient. The name that Tama gives you appears to be the sort of like preferred name associated with his identification, the extremely cringy moniker of Leet Boy. But Luis, you are aware of Leet Boy.
What do I know of Leet Boy?
Leet Boy was rumored to live in the G-Pole library. So often was he asleep there. He is a graduate student at G-Pole in computer science, as sort of like a researcher and theoretician. When engaged by other students, however rarely in conversation, basically only talked about his thesis, hence the sleeping in the library part. What you know that other students at G-Pole might not is that Leet Boy is an occasional but relatively effective hacktivist. A lot of like information leaks, strategic DDoS attacks, or even sometimes essentially like server erasures of New Barons type stuff on the station. Seems to you, at least, like whenever Leet Boy would hit a breaking point with his schoolwork, he would go do something hacktivist-y. Inconsistent activity, pretty good work, not extra specially careful. As noted by the fact that most people know him by his hacker moniker, but also not doing anything that would be construed as more serious than vandalism, not taking any huge swings, which really then begs the question of why Goliath picked him up in a sweep and then put him into a medically induced coma. That part remains pretty unclear. And at least as far as Tama has heard, by the time she reaches out, You know, he's not awake yet by that point. In terms of other information, you know, getting back to you, kind of in this period, let's see. Sammy Cheng seems to have disappeared pretty much entirely following his rescue by Law Zero. Law Zero laying very low. And in fact, the completely coincidentally, of course, Canny Valley has not been open in the interim, and no one has seen or heard from Dev Random, much less Joseph Chapek. Or, I mean, nobody had really seen or heard from Likeable before you made their acquaintance, and certainly no one has after. So, you know, laying very low, and you know, kind of just hopefully Sammy's doing all right. He had got out of Goliath custody at any rate last you saw him. A little ways down from there, first K and B, and then, you know, the next 2 days, Ali both do you resurface fresh accounts, fresh handles, all that good stuff. But you know how to make an overture and identify a compatriot.
God, so I'm gonna have to come up with a new hackernym, aren't I?
Might not be a bad idea. So K and B does not have a ton more information to share, as is often the case. You know, news cycles move on. Probably her guess is that the next time this is going to be like mainstream news is when Barlow Hawthorne, if and when Barlow Hawthorne returns to public life, but for the moment he's still in the hospital and not giving any particular statements or anything. And it just seems like new information dried up. And so speculation and, you know, kind of social media theorizing can carry it a little further. And it's dramatic. It was, you know, eye catching, but with nothing new to say, it has sort of started to get left behind. However, online speculation does continue somewhat. So KMB's overview of, you know, sort of like what the internet lay people are doing here is linking up the reports of thunder to the, you know, assault on Goliath. And it basically breaks down, you know, between anti-Goliath and pro-Goliath theories. The pro-Goliath theories are that there was some sort of broader terrorist plan in place from which the like assault on Goliath, the headquarters, was supposed to distract. And, you know, we don't even know what they actually did. The, you know, anti-Goliath sort of stance is that the, you know, sounds of thunder were something that the cartel was doing, and that the assault on Goliath must have disrupted. What exactly was going on in secret in either of these cases is so varied and implausible that it really kind of doesn't bear getting into. There's no like winner emerging as yet in that narrative. But the armchair theorizing is the one place where the reports of thunder are sort of like gaining traction. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
During all of this, once it is truly mainstream news that cannot be ignored, I send maybe Ramirez a text asking, gee, what happened with Goliath?
Somebody has apparently taught maybe Ramirez how to embed GIFs by this time, because rather than responding verbally or with an emoji, maybe Ramirez responds with a GIF from like an old Western movie of like a bunch of guys on horses like charging through a narrow pathway and like a chain like being pulled up and the horses like tripping over the chain and piling up. Sort of following that, maybe Ramirez says a shit show. Then in a separate statement, no good times coming up, but we should, how would maybe Ramirez say this? We should put our heads together soon. I'll be getting reassigned, in air quotes.
I type multiple responses to that, ranging from reassigned, damn, to do you have any leads, to more expletives before settling on a thumbs up emoji with the single word I agree, or two words I guess, I agree. Yeah, agreed. There we go. Thank you. Dez is my sanity today.
I'm unreliable.
When you get in touch with Ali, Luis, they've got comparatively less on like the, you know, kind of information front, but are really excited but not very cogent about like information recovered you know, in the process of raiding Goliath's systems. The long and short of it is that Bacon has like 17 new listings as a result of some of that information. But it almost goes under the radar until you sort of make a connection that Ali lacked the information to sort of make on their end, which is that there's actually a little bit of oblique information about Leap Boy in what Ali's been coming through. It would appear that and this is some inference that, you know, you and Ali sort of collaborate on in looking at this. But, you know, in the interest of the high level kind of, you know, play that we're doing right now, the likely hypothesis that the two of you arrive at is that in the course of some of Leap Boy's normal, like, hacktivism, blowing off steam, that he seems to have come across some pretty sensitive information, and this seems to have been the impetus for him getting picked up. Why he was then drugged, you can really only speculate, but Ali has the idea that maybe they didn't want him to even be able to talk about what he knew where Goliath personnel could hear. You know, dramatic perhaps, but it does provide an explanation, a possible one. You don't have a clear picture from the Goliath data of what Leap Boy precisely had found, but you do recognize a name that is referenced obliquely in terms of what he might have come across. Kovalevi.
Oh shit. I will pass that along and suggest that Ash
ask maybe Ramirez about this and suggest that Allie and KB delicately sniff around.
I will up the urgency of putting my head together with maybe Ramirez. I am not going to send this over until I've 110% confirmed the identity of who I'm texting.
Yep. Good.
So, you know, that collaboration with Allie, you know, bears, you know, some fruit, but, you know, essentially, that is the extent, you know, of your inferences, based on information Allie brings. And, you know, that gets us, you know, very close to decryption day, as I suppose we can call it.
Brilliant. I probably would intone that we need, and I'm cringing saying this out loud, Light Boy back here as soon as he wakes up.
Leap Boy even?
I intentionally mispronounced it.
That was an in-character correction.
Oh, okay.
This is me as Luis, not me as your sanity.
Well, thank you. I thought it was a sanity check initially.
Thank goodness Luis is not your sanity.
Yeah.
That would be a bad scene.
The gremlin sanity.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad way to live.
You could mash them together and that would be the gremlin sanity.
Mm-hmm.
So
it works well.
Mm-hmm. If I guess I'm going to make this last call for anything that we want to have done by the time Luis finishes this decryption and has our line that we quote unquote opened on.
We were opening in medias res.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Checked in with.
Yeah. Athena, I guess the final thing I'll note is that as the new look is assembled, I do keep a piece of the old arm and a piece of the old face. That might come in handy if at some point down the road, Cato needs to have died after all.
Fair enough. This actually does also, bring to mind something you had said last time was, you know, having insurance on the place through, Archon or one of their subsidiaries, much more likely, how seriously are you as Cato headed back to Earth attempting to pursue the, you know, insurance company's obligations to you?
This hasn't really come up in this campaign. What are the protocols for communicating with Grand Cross from Earth?
It came up way back when,
it did, right? When we were thinking about me sending a note.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so speeds are a little slow. There's a bottleneck to Earth. The big thing is that things that are intrastation online are a lot harder to identify and track back because the bottleneck means that everything that goes from Grand Cross to Earth does pass through. Your only defense there really is volume, and I guess however you can disguise the actual information, you know, to interested eyes. But outside of that, you have access to the Earth internet. Like, you know, it's not restricted or disconnected. It is, you know, a security bottleneck, and it's slower, obviously.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the slowness is no big deal. I think I work with Matchstick to make sure that there are some messages coming plausibly from Earth that are pursuing the claim relatively fervently. And we're using this as an opportunity to seed a bunch of places that Cato would seem to be for anybody looking.
Yep.
Not so far apart that it's implausible, but not so close together that it's helpful.
All right. You know, that might actually be a reasonably good call for a, guess it doesn't matter if I call it criminal underworld or gray market goods, cause they're the same role. You know, in attempting to sort of like misdirect about your location there. So let's go with clever for that. So 2d6 plus 5, if you would.
Sounds good. And I think I would roll with advantage since this is plausible deniability to anything involving covering up, lying about, or concealing my or an ally's involvement in dubious or criminal activity.
Perfect.
Which could, can't think of a better example.
Right.
That is good thing that advantage happened because we're throwing away a one and we're doing 8 plus 5. So right. 13. Oh, actually, and that's 2 4s. So that's critical.
Oh, nice. I mean, you feel pretty good about, you know, the misdirection going on here. You know, you have Cato seemingly like, you know, traveling to various parts of Europe and environs, you know, throughout all of this, and even sort of constructing a loose narrative of like when the communications are more terse versus like, you know, have more information and even documentation, you know, applied to them to, you know, match like how long you were supposedly in this place or that place. You know, it is the sort of way in which you know, Cato once and Vic now approached criminality as an art form, but also a really useful distraction, you know, to sort of like turn it into something of a creative writing exercise from time to time.
This is definitely how I stay sane in the Scrungle Pit for for sure. Yeah.
And, you know, it actually also helps you to pay more attention to the, you know, pursuit of the insurance. And the long and short of it is that you are unlikely to see the money soon, but that unless their investigators turn up evidence that you can't really picture concretely from the actual site of the fire that shows that it, like, you know, it must have been like suspicious, then you know, you should eventually get your policy.
Post campaign payouts, bitches.
Yeah, like episode like 6 of Flying Circus, be like, by the way, I just want to let you guys know.
In a galaxy far, far away.
Yep. I feel like one of my descendants is going to get rich under complicated and dubious circumstances.
I couldn't be prouder. So, with that, I think we now join events in progress. As Luis reveals their findings with the appropriately dramatic looks like we can burn them down. This is still you know, taking place in the Scrungle Pit. You know, I'm gonna fiat at the very least that everybody is in close enough proximity to, you know, be part of the conversation if you would like to. So, looks like we can burn them down.
Leave nothing for them to rebuild from.
That's the ideal.
Hopefully Barlow is within reach of a laptop or TV so he can watch his kingdom fall.
You know, you're fun when you're bloodthirsty.
That is implying that I'm fun most of the time, which is not a compliment I'm used to. Usually get the opposite feedback, kid.
Well, you should get used to some of these things.
May take a while.
Well, this opportunity, oof. Gonna have to. I turn the integer for the IT variable down to zero for the moment. Gonna have to figure out how to use that responsibly. Anyway, this seems like a rare opportunity that we should take.
Seems yes. Like a good step in the right direction.
Yeah.
It's delayed because I've been staring at Vic.
We're probably past having to ask whether anybody's in or not.
We all have the same fucking surname at this point.
Yep.
And it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased.
I'm going to have to get used to it. You know, had the same old name for running on 60 years now, so it'll be a bit of an adjustment period.
I will just look at Vic and just say, Americans.
That's an in-character snort, that snort. It's my first time snorting with the new voice box, so I pay a lot of attention to how it resonates.
So I guess it remains, how do we get this information out in the most devastating way possible?
Yeah, no, I think that's something that will require a bit of coordination. Probably a meeting with Hahi.
Hahi will be just as motivated as we are, if not more so.
Exactly.
Whatever method we do decide on should probably be sudden and all over the place. If it trickles in, then there's room to do damage control.
Of course.
You hear the by now so familiar, it's almost not noticed by your conscious mind, whine of the elevator motor, of the Scrungler ascending from the pit.
The Scrungler ascends.
From the Scrungle pit.
The Scrungler coming out of his well to shame humanity.
The Scrungler emerges from his well to accept delivery of churros. in this case, actually, he appears to be looking for particular pieces of scrap, but he sort of offhandedly remarks, like, nice, hatching a whole new criminal conspiracy. Rad. Always wanted an evil lair.
Thanks again, yeah. By the way, for letting us use your lair. It's been pretty evil.
Righteous, yeah, no, I...
Oh, sorry, I haven't slept in a couple days. But,
I am happy to give you a place to lay low. Got any leads on a new place?
That's probably something that should have been covered in the, pre
yeah.
Burn 'em down time, but,
Oops.
I think it's okay if we've been so distracted by other shit that we haven't actually thought about it. I actually sort of like the notion that at least I have become, despite myself, kind of comfortable in the Scrungle Pit. Wouldn't
You've
say it feels like
home. Acclimated to the Scrungle Pit.
I have. Humans are very adaptable for better and for worse.
There's maybe while that slightly out of character stuff was going on, I view that as maybe being part of your internal monologues. you know, everybody looking at Vic like, surely we have a plan by now, and Vic going, oh, right, leaving.
Also, I like the notion that I may be an intrusive thought in other people's monologues.
Yes. And also that the Scrungler has become apparent asking us when we're planning on moving out. That's all.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he does have a follow up. He's like, it's not like it's a big deal. It's, you know, a big place with, I guess, just the bathroom is the bottleneck. But I ask because, I think I've got a date coming up, and it'd be nice to have some place to come back to if it goes, like, you know, well. So just thought I'd throw that out there. But, like, you know, if you don't have a place, you don't have a place. Maybe, you know, you could have, like, a, you know, nice night out to dinner or something, and it wouldn't be an issue. I'd, like, you know, could put, like, a sock on the door or whatever.
I make steady eye contact with Tyr in order to avoid laughing. Ing just happens to be the person who is standing in the opposite most direction from the Scrungler. There's a vein in my forehead that is twitching.
I was going to say, you know, Tia, you probably have the mechanical know-how to identify some of the parts that the Scrungler has been collecting from up here while he's been talking to you, but lack the experience of human biology to imagine how they would fit together into something in particular. But Vic, you sort of realize all at once that he seems to be making some sort of like electric shaver out of parts in his.
That's way better than where I thought that was going.
I could tell what that was.
Could still be for the date. I don't fucking know.
Yep.
I resist the urge to reassure Cal of this, that it is in fact an electric shaver.
It's going to be perhaps some later shaping going on.
Yeah. In any case,
Scrungle scaping.
Scrungle scaping. Oh no!
Yeah, winner / loser, both. In any case, once he seems to have gathered everything he wanted from, you know, this higher level, he's got like a small armload of bric-a-brac, and he heads back over to the elevator. He goes, "Yes, you know, just let me know. It's no big thing." And they, good luck on your criminal conspiracy, you know, gives you like a little two finger salute, engages the motor to go back down.
Thanks, mate. You're a legend.
Arrivederci, Scrungler, I say, jacking it all the way back up.
I do like this modular accent.
There is no particular response from the Scrungler after that. Presumably because he has no idea how to respond. I just heard that voice say, "Monsignor Scrungler."
That needs to happen. I have continued to make steady eye contact with Tyr.
It's an electric shaver. Don't worry too much.
I don't know if that makes it better or worse.
Depends on how you're applying it.
Right, so back to crime.
I nod appreciatively.
That's what I always like to hear. Well, feels terrible to say this, but the Scrungler has a point. We do need a place that isn't here eventually.
Mm. I sent a message to Tama. She mentioned she has a place to hide out. Mm-hmm. I sent a message saying we may need a new place to hunker down. And then after a moment, I just send, "Please help. I think the Scrungler has a date." And
Tama replies immediately upon hearing that, getting that second one, says, "I promise it's not me."
I respond with, "In his dreams," and then ask if there's any leads on a place we can hunker down where there's not a mutual bathroom and the threat of a sock on a non-existent doorknob.
For what it's worth, you could probably get a sock on the door handle up on the roof.
Like a wind sock, though.
Assuming that sock still blows in the wind.
Oh, god damn it. The flag they had to engineer for the moon so that it wouldn't.
Oh.
I'm going to need my inhaler after this episode.
We need to escape the gravitational pull of the Scrungle Pit, or it's the rest of the campaign is just this.
Yeah.
This has actually just been a stealth transition to a cyberpunk Made in Abyss adaptation. You can only go deeper into the Scrungle Pit. You can never come back out.
You cannot ascend the Scrungle Pit.
Oh, the Scrungler reserves the right to ascend. God damn.
Meanwhile, I'm out of ways to politely inquire into crashing with Tama. So.
Yeah. No, she she does respond. She says, well, I do have my spot here in the basements, but it's not really very, I think that five people would be kind of pushing it. It doesn't have light fixtures or climate control or furniture or doors.
So the basements.
I like camping.
You know, I'm pretty handy. If we have a way of transferring any of this scrap, I could probably make the basement into a home as part of, you know, us staying there. How much space are we talking about? How much time we got?
Well,
I assume you're passing this on to Tama if you are not too mortified by the suggestion.
I do not use the H word, but I do translate the rest of it.
Sure. And Tyr?
Yeah, you know, another possible avenue we could pursue is that I could reach out to Law Zero. Getting closer to them, I'm sure that it wouldn't be free, even if it is. But they're used to breaking the law. I'm sure that they've got plenty of hideouts.
One of the perks of being in a gang.
I'd vote at least initially for just fixing up the basements. Law Zero's probably got a lot of considerations on their plate at the moment, particularly vis-a-vis lying low and restricting who can communicate with them.
Fair.
I would just hope it's a value add for Tama, you know? I don't want to suggest that it's just like I make fleeting eye contact with Calvin, look away, a U-Haul situation.
A U-Haul situation?
Never mind.
I don't, I guess, know who, if anybody, this particular thought would occur to. But you do know somebody who has been squatting in an abandoned apartment building.
A Pasha.
Mm-hmm. Now,
this thought has crossed my mind. Okay. Both as a player and a character, and said latter shot it down because also sex cult.
I'm sure they would make lousy neighbors, but
I do think, in fact, that I think for a moment that I say, and I guess kind of the opposite of a U-Haul situation is like a itinerant sex cult.
Yeah, no, but I am not following you at all right now.
We could call a Pasha.
Yeah, the thought of shacking up with a Pasha had occurred to me, but it's a lot of heat, and I'm not sure.
The snickering is audible from your phrasing.
All of those words were a very interesting choice, but yeah, that's also a really good idea.
I am mechanically incapable of blushing.
Well, and I
might
want to
say that out loud.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, you know, to players and listeners alike, that you can go whatever direction you want. I just, on the off chance that it simply had not occurred out of character, I figured the idea would have occurred in character. So it is one of the more spacious options, though that mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily make it one of the more comfortable options, if that tracks. So continue your discussion.
In character, would we consider a Pasha's apartment to be secure enough and off the grid? I guess I had thought that it was in her name, but if she's squatting, it might be more secure than I thought.
She's squatting. I think that is the full length and breadth of the security of it right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sex cults have famously bad OPSEC, but.
True. And, you know, not for nothing, but it would probably occur to both Vic and Luis that, you know, Apatia was not an active participant in your escape from the basements, being insensate for most of it, but it is entirely possible that her likeness was captured by Goliath. It doesn't seem that they've done anything with that information. If they have it, they may or may not know where to find her. They may or may not care to. You have no real information about that, but you know, it's a possibility to consider. You know, Tama had holographic projection armor on in both of those cases, mm-hmm. and is further off the grid, less space, fewer creature comforts. You know, the it is perhaps notable that Haru has not particularly been forthcoming about volunteering information about where she and her dad are right now, but mm-hmm. obviously she's got plenty of means, but a fair amount of observation on the obvious places where, you know, she could help you out. But she may, for all you know, have safe houses prepared, you know, so that remains an option.
I would advise that we check in with Haru, because I don't want to call a quid pro quo, but she owes us one. And that would be my preference, I suppose, slightly above Apeisha's apartment complex. I like having a bit of light. I don't do well in dark, cramped spaces.
I mean, we're certainly within our rights to ask.
Yeah, seems like a good first step.
I will ping Haru with, one, the suggestion of a soiree to discuss making most effective use of some fascinating information gleaned recently, where recently is capitalized. And two, inquire as to whether she happens to have a short to medium term safe house, just, you know, spare.
So, assuming here you were communicating via some sort of text medium with Haru, yep. You get these sort of like, you know, is typing stops. And then the message that you get reads, okay, I promise this isn't a joke and it's actually not going to be a bad place, but are you familiar at all with the book club cafe in Jinxing District?
Am I familiar with it?
You have heard the name. What you're particularly surprised by, though, is that Jinxing District is in Sushin Ward. It's like in the downtown entertainment district. It's pretty busy, not as like, you know, bustling as a couple of other parts of Sushin, but a weird place to lay low. You know, and obviously Book Club Cafe has the word cafe in it.
Yep. I'm vaguely aware of it.
Okay. There's another bit of apparent dithering, at which point Haru says, so, okay, it's a secret, but I'm one of the owners of the Book Club Cafe. It's a really good way to get information. There are rooms above it that, as far as anyone who frequents the cafe knows, and most of the people who work there know, are storage and office for the cafe. But the top floor is a number of apartments that I reserve for my use that you'd be welcome to. And I've made sure that you can access them from a stairwell that leads up from the basement without passing through the cafe, though you can also come down through the building if you'd like. So it would be relatively circumspect far away from other places where you were hiding, and all you would have to do is not disrupt the maid cafe on the first floor.
Honestly, that sounds lovely and is extremely generous of you. I will convey this to the others before hitting send on the acceptance.
Does the cafe need security?
You're looking for non-criminal employment already? I'm disappointed, Mom. You are so not ready for what you've signed up for.
No. Not at all. The breaking was clearly out of character and also in character, albeit way more silent. Probably staring at me. You get the sense of the old internet dial-up sound, if you had any concept of that.
Only as a meme.
I need an alias or an alibi. And cash.
I will convey the inquiry as to needing security. Mm-hmm. At the same time as I'm just looking at you like...
You need to describe this for the listeners.
Someone else describe this expression.
An insistent and unblinking stare.
Emphasis on unblinking. Eyes slightly widened.
Like a cat clock that has ceased to look back and forth.
There we go.
There it is.
Nailed it.
Perfect. Perfect description. So, you know, sort of stepping out of the verbatim back and forth here, if there are no objections to this plan, then it can be organized apace. After a little bit of clarification and apparently some circumspect conferring with the other co-owners of the business, the question that Haru has for Ash is, well, we do need security, but it is a themed establishment. Are you willing and able to do security in a butler's uniform?
Pictures.
That's smart. That's smart.
Yeah, yeah. No,
spoken like someone who has said yes to this too eagerly earlier in life.
Picture comes through. It's a stylized uniform consisting of like a tuxedo shirt and sort of a mini buttoned waistcoat, darker lapels, and a short, tail coat, open but double breasted with a lapel pin. Includes a black tie and white gloves, slacks, in sort of the tuxedo style. You're not sure if the pocket watch in the image that you're sent as part of the uniform or not.
If it's not so form-fitting, sure. I have one worse.
Haru indicates that, well, we don't usually tailor them. We just find the one that, you know, is closest. I guess if you stick around long enough, though, it would, you know, eventually we'd fit it. Not super close, but to your, you know, build. It looks like, you know, if you want it and can, you know, wear the tuxedo, then the job could be yours and make a pretty good cover.
I have no pride.
Oof. What a statement.
And we are in need of a new source of income, not to mention a new front. So a maid cafe could do worse, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Win-win chicken.
Congratulations party. On being the breadwinner of the family.
I'm kind of used to it.
Probably won't be a single income household for very long.
Ideally not.
And well, and it hasn't come up, and you don't really know the role of it in the actual business, but it's called the Book Club Cafe, so there might be a contribution that Vic could make as well. We'll find out, I suppose. In any case, you know, this seems like an agreeable enough arrangement, and so you know, logistics start getting hashed out, and it seems like you know, whatever you would like to transport from here to there that isn't easily human portable, you know, like without being overly conspicuous, would have to make the journey either by being shipped or being brought through the basements. But otherwise, it should be as simple as taking the most efficient route, you know, that you're comfortable with, to a relatively nearby basement entrance, and then traversing to the basement stairs to get up without having to go through the rest of the building. Haro indicates that the you know, primary door locks on that top floor are electronic, and sends the you know, sort of key information to Luis to, you know, make and alter however they see fit to gain access and then secure the area.
I fiddle.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, for what it's worth, there is a little bit in the conversation there where you know, in response to the observation of generosity, Haro's just very casually, "Well, you saved both my and my dad's lives, so I think it's, you know, only fair. Not that I wouldn't help if that hadn't been the case, but, you know, it would be genuinely insane for me to, you know, not help if I could." So, yeah. Relocation underway in whatever stages you wish to have them. Any other discussions in the Scrungle Pit with the Scrungler or before your relocation?
I definitely politely notify Tama that we found some alternate lodgings that are secure and accessible from the basement, even.
She seems to think that is essentially ideal, especially, you know, given that it allows for social calls between you all and her without, you know, intruding on her camping trip.
I do note that they are spacious, but ask that she not judge the uniform. You gotta make ends meet.
She begins to send you guesses as to what the uniform is. They start off with like undignified rent-a-cop looks, then drift into elegant gothic Lolita looks, and then get to swimsuits. Never once does she send you a butler's uniform as a guess.
I just send thumbs down emojis. Yep. And then when she gets to the swimsuits, I just send dot, 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 really?
To which she says, "No, I figured probably not, but, you know, didn't know where else to go. And was trying to think of what you would not want me to judge. So, I don't know. Look forward to finding out." All right.
And so, we didn't make overtures to Apatia, so we don't have to let her down gently. And we've expressed our gratitude to the Scrungler already. So I think, you know, what he would want is I just leave a note when we depart that says, "Gone crimin."
Amazing. Very nice.
Love the callback.
All right, so you arrive by basement. You take the stairs up to the top floor of the specified address. And what you essentially have are a hallway that goes along like the back of the building's upper floor, and then three rooms, each leading to effectively two bedroom, one bath apartment. They are spacious for this part of the station. So not huge, but, not studios, which is much more typical of this area. You have access to all three. They are not meaningfully furnished, would be the way I would put it. You have sort of your run of the place. They have windows that look out over the front, which have, fairly quality blinds that allow you to obscure view into the space, as well as to look out and get a little bit of a feel for where you are. It's a fairly busy street. It's essentially it's an artery that leads from Turing Ward to Sishin Ward, relatively busy, which is why this place is here. It gets a fair bit of foot traffic from kind of both directions. And sure enough, maid cafe with a somewhat library-y theming seems to cater to geeks, nerds. Each of the people employed as maids seem to sort of like have a little bit of a persona. Fans of sci-fi and fantasy, the gamers, the tech junkies, a decently sized clientele that you can't tell anything specific about just from watching. But the whole operation seems to go reasonably smoothly. Nothing, seems to be too unusual or out of the ordinary for this kind of place, though. It does seem, with a little bit closer observation, of the operation itself, that the book club theming is mostly theming. Some people do read. Some people even do read the books that are in the cafe, but it's mostly decoration.
I was going to say, I try not to look at Vic with that.
I was going to say probably, a couple of days to get moved, settled, arranged, end of day two of that, beginning of day three of that, Ash, you'll get, set up with your, new uniform and security detail, pretty low impact job, keep an eye on patrons, pay attention to what's going on outside just in case anything needs to be done. Kind of a themed bouncer role. You don't have any particular armaments. If anything gets too hairy, you're supposed to call local law enforcement. But if somebody is just, being unpleasant, aggressive, touchy, insistent, ask them to leave. And then if they won't, help them leave, and then send word up the chain. Relatively basic. A doesn't look like they often have a lot of problems. Back of house manager who's giving you the ins and outs says that they haven't really had too many problems since they changed their lineup. They used to have a role, at any given time designated to losing debates with nerds, that actually seemed to cause more problems. They got rid of that, and now they haven't had nearly as many problems. The manager watches with a little bit of satisfaction as one of their maids is absurdly rude to a G-Pole student who appears to be extremely pleased with this outcome and tips her generously. Says, yeah, so hopefully won't be too big an issue, nothing too much to handle, but having you here should discourage all the worst behavior. Let me know if you have any questions.
I have a lot of questions.
Oh?
None that you want me asking right now.
Suit yourself. Mostly the clientele ignores you, and the employees are friendly but brisk, keeping relatively busy. One of the maids, sort of coming on to her shift, sees you and sees that you're new, and then sort of does another little take and goes, "Oh, that is the best use of the butler uniform. No one is going to act out. Ooh, this is good." And then goes to start her shift.
I shove my hands in my pockets and nod to her.
taller blonde maid, the one who was really, really rude to that customer earlier, takes a moment to say, "Don't be too nonchalant, or some of our clients may try to order tea from you." And then she's back on the floor doing her thing.
Presumably, she's back to her work too quickly to notice me grimace.
Seems like it. What are the others who have not already found themselves a day job getting up to here, Tyr?
Yeah, pretty simple. I think that, step one is going to be to have my drones run like counter surveillance. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on anybody that might be trying to keep an eye on us. Yeah, beyond that, I'd defer to others, but just kind of settling in, seeing what I can do to increase our security.
Excellent.
I might also have you check on the apartment.
Hmm. I'll do so.
Mm-hmm. Long and short of, having checked it out is that it does not seem as though anyone has been there or done anything with it or taken particular note of it. Presumably in about a day, the building management will be expecting the rent check. But other than that, doesn't seem like there's been any evidence that anybody's paid particular mind.
Mm-hmm. Cal, would you like me to try to retrieve something for us? The drones are pretty independent.
Yeah, there's a few things. The rest we should probably host up on a college forum and let some students in need of the materials know that there's clothes and G-pole stuff up for grabs, free furniture.
Yeah, plenty of students in need. It's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm not keen on paying rent.
No.
So I provide Tyr with instructions on retrieving, which Rubbermaid containers, the roughneck totes to retrieve, along with some pictures and then the safe.
Let me know if that's a roll to see if the drones can get in and manipulate things.
I think any of the stuff they can get in, they can manipulate small things. I think any of the stuff
that's too big
that was in that list is going to be something that you would have to go and carry, to get it out and back to where you are. Now, you could source a cart and get it in one go without drawing a whole bunch of attention. But it would be something you would have to you know, somebody would have to do in person. The other option, I suppose, being to try and like hire someone over the internet to do it for you, which is, you know, obviously kind of a crapshoot.
Well, I guess the safest option, well, I don't know. Check with Burn. Knock on the door. Mm-hmm. Burn, what do you recommend?
Sorry, recommend for what?
Retrieving things. Could get a rando to do it for us through the app there. Fetch a thing. Not sure what it's called. Or I could go in person to retrieve some things from our apartment.
No.
You're the OPSEC person.
Counter suggestion. Vic goes. As the person who does not among us look like someone who needs to be avoiding visual identification.
Actually, that works out well.
Sorry, what'd you say, Vic?
Happy to do it. One of the advantages of a fresh face. Plus, it'll give me a chance to, I don't know, see how the neighborhood's going.
All right. It doesn't exactly pose any problems. As we mentioned before, mechanically speaking, your reconfiguration has not sapped you of your strength, you know, that you bought in your arms at character creation. You know, it's as simple as essentially renting a dolly or a cart, you know, borrowing the key and heading over, grabbing the indicated things, and then piecing out. The neighborhood around G-Pole is tenser than it used to be. It seems like students are still doing, you know, socializing, drinking, partying, shows, but they're coming over closer to where you're currently headquartered to do that stuff. You know, they'll grab lunch in Selden District, but, you know, they head to places like Jinxing for nightlife or meeting up off campus. The IMX, you know, sort of roller drones are not everywhere all the time, but they are in evidence. You know, you see them occasionally as you walk around. Do you swing by where the frontispiece was?
I think I do. I think, drunk on the inordinate pleasure of not being recognized, I definitely take a look.
I would like you to roll a d6 and tell me what you get.
Okay. I rolled dice punks, or six.
When you turn the corner to look at where the frontispiece was, you note that it burned down pretty thoroughly and, you know, took parts of the walls on either side with it. So there's tarp over that, over those parts. It's in the process of being cleaned up, not extra specially thoroughly, but it helps no one to have, you know, ash blowing around.
There's something about the thoroughness that fills me with a pride that I'm allowing myself to recognize as parental pride.
Mm. The other thing that you notice, though, having taken in the larger picture, is that someone in ill-fitted pleated khakis is standing in front of the site where your shop burned down and taking a bunch of pictures while talking into a microphone. Caleb Dryden is making some kind of journal or documentary here.
Kill him.
Yeah.
Ah, I have a fresh face. No one will look twice at me. Let me do a murder.
The burner phone of identities. Single serving. I do not kill Caleb Dryden on sight.
At least physically, I'm sure you kill Caleb in your mind.
Yes, many times over.
He does not take particular note of you or indeed anything else. So if you would like to simply proceed past, you can. You rolled a six, and my thing was, if it's a six, you happen to pass by when Caleb Dryden is there.
Hmm.
Do we hear what, well, does Vic hear what Caleb is saying?
I guess that depends on how, like, close you want to approach.
I wander close enough that I could be noticed, and I can definitely hear, but I don't engage right away.
So as you come up, sort of out of his line of sight, you can hear him sort of speaking, into the, it looks like he's got what is essentially a digital camera with a little like field mic plugged into it that he's talking into, as he sort of takes footage and photographs from different angles. And, he's saying, Thoroughness is suspicious. I think that either it was some kind of hit or perhaps dreamer activity. If they got too close, well, on either end, might have taken them out. This is highly unusual for Grand Cross. We have fewer on average than one building burned down this thoroughly in any given year. Highly suspicious.
I sort of, without breaking stride, say, why blame a dreamer when a corpo or a cop will do?
He sort of looks around a little bit and squints at you, says, why indeed? And then turns to his microphone and says, site surveilled, retreating, and packs up the camera and hustles down the sidewalk in the opposite direction.
I love the ghost hunter energy of that.
Yeah, EKG meter just on the charts. Mm-hmm.
If there is anybody on Grand Cross who exudes ghost hunter energy, it is Caleb Dryden.
Mm-hmm. I'll fiat too that I said that two notches more Italian than I actually said it. I think I've settled on a 2-4 in public.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The fact that the rest of the family doesn't have an accent, sometimes it do be like that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Only one of us is Italian. The rest of us are in space.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get Italian in space? A question for another day.
I was going to say, what's the gender fluid equivalent of like patriarch and matriarch?
Mm.
Autarch.
I was gonna say the vatriarch of the vatriarch.
Vatriarch is very good.
Mm. So
I convey this story to the group by secure channels, because it is above all very funny.
Yeah. You successfully retrieve all that you were sent to retrieve. You head on back with everything, bring it up, especially if you're ending your rental of the apartment, a couple of posts to campus social media will probably speak for everything that's left there. If not, clean up. You probably aren't getting your security deposit back, but clean enough break otherwise.
I doubt we're getting ours back either at the frontispiece, so fair enough.
Oh, we're getting the deposit back, that is to say the insurance money. It'll just be after the end of the campaign.
Time will tell.
So with that, and some work on Vic's part to set up sort of workshop space as previously done in the Scrungle Pit, you have turned, as I believe Drew, you had said last time, your safe house into a safe home, or at least begun the process. When February ticks over into March, so we have at this stage a couple of potential, you know, actions, leads, home base to work from, at least for now, some cover, particularly where Ash is concerned, have tied up most of the immediate loose ends for, you know, your characters personally, in relatively satisfactory ways. There are, of course, some other folks that you could reach out to touch base with, varying levels of operational security. And of course, you have this, you know, information, some of which, you know, still sort of to be trawled through, things like the video of the Leaper R&D are, you know, probably the most impactful, as well as, you know, the easiest to identify and comb through. There are documents as well that'll be a little bit trickier, just in terms of like figuring out and establishing context and reading through all of it. But, you know, the picture that the overview that you have paints is that this seems to have been a Goliath corporate or Barlow Hawthorne personal security policy, essentially. You know, if something went sideways in their relationship to the cartel, you know, this was probably supposed to be a ripcord for that kind of thing happening. So we also stand, you know, with Law Zero sort of still hiding out, not, you know, making any moves, no one really around, no particular information from them or about them, or Sammy Chang for that matter. But, you know, probably a decent place to wrap here is that, you know, mid-morning on March the 1st, right as Ash is getting ready to, you know, get started on the brunch shift of the security detail, Tama will relay a message from First Aid Kitten, who got it from their contact, from her contact at the hospital, that while not in great shape, Leap Boy is awake. So we'll be able to pick up next time with hopefully most of our ducks in something resembling a row and a couple of leads we can follow up on to start angling into what we're going to do with the, you know, sort of information and allies we've lined up. Anything that needed to get taken care of before I, you know, lead us out?
No, don't.
I will say I've been making overtures at the bookshop portion of our new environs, but I suppose we'll see whether that bears fruit in the future. Bears front, is what I meant to say.
Well, it sounds like that'll conclude this session of Dice Punks. So thanks for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did and that you'll join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com and on Tumblr and Blue Sky as at Dice Punks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell, so say goodbye to the kind folks back on Earth, players.
Thanks for listening. It's your absolute right to figure out who you are, and I would argue to decide how Italian you want to be.
We appreciate you tuning in. Thank heavens we're out of the Scrungler's Pit and I can finally put together a coherent sentence.
Thanks for listening, folks. And in the course of my assisting our transition, I discovered that Ash's birthday is on the 29th of February. So everyone wish them a happy 15th birthday.
Hey.
Here, here. Well, yes, thank you for listening. There are far more destructive things that you could have been doing with your time, so thanks for choosing this.
You know, accurate. And as the poet once said, could it be that my dream would come true, building a machine that would actually do what I want it to do? Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for Luke's Lies. Luis's Lies. The music in this episode, Augment or Die, is by Emerson Boatwright and our very own bookmonger, Drew. Check out their other work at the link in the show notes. Editing and our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who's appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work on the internet where she goes by anything sews. Site design and graphics for dicepunks.com or by the Revenant Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Machevic, Freya Erling's daughter, and Minerva McJonda. You can find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/hardwired island. Links to the system and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, dicepunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks after show for episodes 1.1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
I don't understand celebrating St. Patrick's Day in space. For one, there aren't that many Irish folks up here. For two, there aren't that many Catholics either. For three, there aren't any snakes unless some rich asshole brought one up as a pet or a murder weapon or got it from HF or something. So mostly it's celebrated by people claiming their share of a heritage that doesn't fucking belong to them in order to have an excuse to get drunk? I don't understand why people like being drunk anyway, but that's a different rant. My mom would always cook, and often it was supplied, or at least paid for, by Graham Chavon until she died. Then it was catch-as-catch-can. Uncle Ryan would bring his fiddle and tell stories, and we had a grand old time. The gulf from there to here is huge, and whatever passes for corned beef on the station is dubious at best. So no, I will not be wearing green tomorrow. Good guess that the ginger's Irish, though.